Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 28, 2016. I am Jason Powell. Before we start today, one final reminder that I was a guest on the WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross Ross Report podcast. My time at the top of the Ross Report listing will end later on tonight when I get bumped by Mike Tenay, who will be Jim Ross's latest guest. But you can still listen to the show at jrsbarbecue.com or at podcast1.com. And again, a big final thanks to Jim Ross for having me on the show for the second time. I'm going to get into the WWE Raw hit list and my bonus thoughts on Raw in a moment, but I do want to start off by talking about the WWE draft. I know many of you are very excited about it, and I think for good reason. Unfortunately, though, WWE's hype for the draft has not really increased my level of enthusiasm. I mean, they're running regular commercials now, basically, during Raw, and we've seen podiums on the stage. We've seen Stephanie McMahon and Shane McMahon bicker about who's going to control the two brands, and we've seen some silly appearances by former general managers that really didn't do anything more than bring back bad memories from past eras. And I realize they don't want the draft to overshadow everything right now and make it feel like it's a lame duck show, but I think they at least should be building anticipation, and nothing they have done on television has really excited me. I would say the pre-draft hype really peaked with the initial announcement that came via press release, and it's just sort of been thrown out there on television. And yeah, the McMahon siblings care about it, and the former general managers care about it because they want power. Why aren't the wrestlers ever talking about it? We heard New Day express concern that they could be split up. Beyond that, it's just not something that WWE is having talent work into their promos, and I think there's a way to find a better balance here. And I do understand they have two more weeks of television to hype the draft. Next week's Raw is airing on a holiday in the United States. SmackDown kind of feels like an afterthought right now. Not even so, like, the show quality is okay. It's just that, I mean, if you look at the numbers and it's not pretty, that really leaves the bulk of the hype for the draft, that will be meaningful and seen by what should be a full allotment of viewers, would be the July 11th show, July 11th edition of Raw and whatever they do on SmackDown. Are they actually going to tell us who the general managers are going to be at that point on July 11th? They're going to wait till then? Are they actually going to be called chief operating officers of the brand? As one ProWrestling.net Twitter follower, at ProWrestlingNet, as he pointed out, that Michael Cole used that terminology last night, which is, at first it just seems awful, but maybe they feel like they need to change the title since they've reminded us of just how awful the general managers have been, but I digress on that one. You know, the point of all this is that I want to be excited about the draft, but WWE so far just hasn't done their part. Switching gears a little bit, the Raw Enhancement Wrestlers last night were named after Philadelphia Phillies minor league baseball prospects. The Enhancement Wrestlers who lost to Enzo Amore and Big Cass were named Mitch Walding and Carlos Tochi. I apologize if I'm butchering those names. But Philly.com writer Matt Breen reported that the real Walding and Tochi play for the Philadelphia Phillies minor league affiliate, the Clearwater Threshers. And it's a team that is based near Tampa, where last night's Raw was held. And since then, we had someone post in the comment section that the wrestlers were actually Nick Nero and Era of the WXW Wrestling independent promotion out of Central Florida. But I think kind of a fun touch that WWE would name name the enhancement guys. These were the guys that lost Enzo and Cass, and they named them after minor league ball players. The real Walding and Tochi did have some fun with it. They posed for a picture that we've got on the site. It was posted by Walding on his Twitter page, and so they were aware of it, and they posed with a title belt and everything. They had some fun with it, so kind of a cool story there. Hey, .NET members are listening to my 41-minute full audio review of last night's Raw show, plus my 38-minute Q&A audio show from Monday, and the full review of the Ring of Honor Best in the World event that I recorded after the show on Friday night. Let's just say I didn't think it was all that great of a show. If you like house shows that you get charged $45 to watch on pay-per-view, hey, this is the show for you. And you can find out more of my thoughts on the show by joining us on the member side of things. It's the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. All of our audio history is available, and you can sign up for membership by visiting the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you are there, you'll see the sign-up area, and once you get in there, you're going to see three different pricing options. $7.50 is the one-month price tag, and if you want to save yourself some money, of course, there is the six-month option that'll bring the price down, and then the annual option, which brings that price all the way down to an average of $5.50 per month, which is a hell of a deal. So again, all the details available on the main page at ProWrestling.net in the sign-up area. And if you ever have any questions on any of that, feel free to email me, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Just be sure to spell it out. Or follow me on Twitter, @ProWrestlingNet, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have on membership or, anything for that matter. Let's get into the WWE Raw hit list as it appears on ProWrestling.net. As always, I want to say as always on Tuesday, but things have been coming up where just haven't been reading the hit list on a regular basis on Tuesday, either news or just doing my full review on here. So it's the first time in a while, and we are going to start with the hits today. The suspension of Roman Reigns being acknowledged. Nothing makes WWE wrestlers look like corporate puppets more than when they are not allowed to acknowledge an elephant in the room. Fortunately, WWE opted to have Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Stephanie McMahon address the suspension of Roman Reigns. The only real negative of the segment was scripting Rollins to act like he was delivering an impromptu shoot, only to have the production team take his cue to run the Roman Reigns apology on the big screen. It took away any chance that fans would suspend their disbelief long enough to believe that Rollins was actually saying something that the company didn't approve of ahead of time. Despite that poor attention to detail, Seth's speech and the reactions of Ambrose and Stephanie were the most interesting aspects of the entire show. And then John Cena and Seth Rollins is the next hit. A good match made more interesting by the stipulation that Cena could earn a spot in the title match of Battleground by defeating Rollins. I'm happy they stuck with the triple threat match, but I like the way the stipulation made this match in the main event feel more relevant. The interference by the club was expected, yet effective, and that it added heat to Cena's feud with the trio. In fact, I'm curious to see whether we get another Cena against Styles match, or if they end up going with a six-man tag match with Cena, finding a pair of partners to face the trio. Quick note, stick around for the bonus thoughts, and I will get into a couple of potential partners for John Cena, should they go in that direction. The next hit, though, is Dean Ambrose against AJ Styles. Cena got his revenge by playing a part in costing Styles a match. Some fans are complaining that neither match led to someone new being added to the Battleground main event, but there was no reason to add anyone. The match is about the three Shield members facing off in a triple threat match for the first time ever. Adding Cena and or Styles to that match would have completely changed the dynamic for the worst and left the rest of the show thin on star power. By the way, it was nice to see the club and Rollins get heat to close the show for a change. Up next on the hit side of things is Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn on the highlight reel. Good mic work from Owens and Zayn, and I like the way that Zayn called out Jericho for trying to stir the pot rather than being oblivious to it, and Jericho continues to shine as the over-the-top heel who shows ass on a regular basis. The next hit is Rusev against Titus O'Neil. The best finish of the night. Alright, so a count-out finish is far from the most exciting finish, but it was the right finish in that it gave Titus a win to set up the U.S. title rematch while still protecting Rusev. Titus has shown good fire over the last couple of weeks, yet Rusev continues to be protected as he is slowly being rebuilt ideally to the monster heel status. The next hit is Xavier Woods. I'm still fearful of the New Day and Wyatt family feud due to the clash in styles, but I did enjoy the way Woods acted once Bray Wyatt arrived. Woods seemed like he was in a trance last week, but this week he came off as simply being captivated by Wyatt, who recognized it and is now trying to exploit it. While only time will tell what the end result of this part of the story will be, it has added an unexpected and entertaining wrinkle to the feud. The final hit is Alberto Del Rio. The Tampa crowd had faded by this point in the third hour. Who could blame them? Nevertheless, they came to life when Del Rio blasted Sheamus with a kick and then abandoned him. I suspect this was nothing more than WWE playing into past tension amongst the former League of Nations members to give them an easy match finish, but I hope it was the first step toward Del Rio turning babyface. As good as Del Rio can be as a heel, WWE saddled him with a rotten return gimmick and he's never recovered. Someone in WWE needs to watch his work outside the company to see just how effective he can be as a babyface. On to the misses. We will start with Enzo Amore and Big Cass. The Wave? Enzo and Big Cass are over big. The live crowd chants along with their usual mic work, and they hang on Enzo's every word. So why push it by forcing a silly Wave request on the fans when they're already getting a great organic response? Here's hoping this doesn't become the norm. By the way, the Social Outcasts return. No one cares. The gimmick sucks the oxygen out of every room, and all three men would be more entertaining if they returned to being singles undercard wrestlers. The next miss is The Miz against Kane. WWE had to know that revealing Kane as a mystery opponent was going to be a letdown. It seemed obvious enough that it would be Kane, but that never stops fans from getting their hopes up. The days of Kane qualifying as an exciting surprise for anything other than a house show crowd, or perhaps something involving Undertaker, have passed. I got a mild kick out of Maurice faking the injury to get Miz out of the match until I realized it probably means we'll be seeing more from Miz and Kane. Final miss is the overall show. There were more hits than misses, but the show dragged even more than usual. The live crowd seemed bored by the third hour, and it made for a lousy television atmosphere. By the way, I can't believe WWE didn't give viewers any incentive to watch next week, given that Raw is going to air on Independence Day, which is a holiday in the United States. I assume the numbers are going to be way down either way, but you'd think they would at least offer some type of a hook so that fans would at least record the show. Then again, after seeing their nearly weekly talk show segment plugged for SmackDown, I just assume that Vince McMahon can't be bothered to finalize much of anything until the day of a show. Let's get into some Raw bonus thoughts. The big thing I took away from the Roman Reigns suspension acknowledgement is that it was heels Stephanie and Seth, I almost said Shane, but Stephanie and Seth who were the ones bad-mouthing him. And it was Dean Ambrose, the babyface, who was taking the approach that, he made a mistake and he's owned up to it. Now, things could change, but it does kind of tell me that, I suspect very little has changed when it comes to how they intend to position Roman in terms of being a babyface or whatever that character was he was playing before the suspension. I mean, this seems like the ideal time to turn him heel. And if it doesn't happen here, if Vince just sticks with the guy character, whatever you want to call him, it's okay if you boo him, it's okay if you cheer him, that sort of a thing. I think we all just need to throw our hands up and accept that Vince McMahon isn't going to budge on this. And I think many people have already, or actually already had prior to this, but then when this happened, it was like, well, maybe they do go ahead and turn him heel now. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing they did last night that can't be undone. You know, Reigns could tell Ambrose, for instance, that he didn't need his support, or he could heel on the fans and blame them somehow for all of this. There's plenty of ways they can turn this around, and if they want to turn him heel and they want it to be a surprise, you wouldn't show your cards necessarily in this segment, but I don't know, just the way it was done kind of left me feeling like, yeah, they're still thinking about Roman as whatever he was before he left. There was a lot of buzz over WWE stripping the name of their championship down to WWE Championship on Raw, rather than calling it the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, as they've been doing. Michael Cole started doing it last night. I had someone on Twitter point out that Seth Rollins had to kind of correct himself when he almost said World Heavyweight Champion. I don't know exactly what to make of it. You know, as I mentioned to members last night in audio, it very well could be a sign that they intend to go with two champions, and they're kind of setting up WWE champion, and then they'll go back to having a World Heavyweight Champion. But it could also be as simple as Vince McMahon waking up and just having some whim that he didn't want to say World Heavyweight anymore. I mean, he's weird like that, let's face it. But the timing is obviously interesting, and I guess I'm just kind of taking a wait-and-see approach on this one. It's certainly worth noting that suddenly the terminology changed there. On the off chance that we are going to get a John Cena against the club six-man tag match somehow, rather than a Cena-style singles match at Battleground, as I mentioned earlier, it'd be interesting to see just who they would go with. My guess is that we are going to get the singles match, because WWE usually doesn't wait too long to have Cena get his wins back, but it's also possible they're saving that big win for SummerSlam. Because they're not having a split crew show for some, there's not two pay-per-view events in August. It's both crews on the same show. So it's, even if Cena and Styles end up on opposite brands, and they may not, but even if they do end up on opposite brands, there may not be any rules in place yet. They may just kind of let SummerSlam be what it is. I don't know how they'll make that work, but a name to keep in mind as a potential partner would seem to be Randy Orton, but there are some reports indicating that he might not be back until after SummerSlam, so that might rule him out. I mean, I would cringe if it were Big Show or Kane. And I can't say I'd be any more excited about the guys who usually get slotted in as tag team partners of the star, the Uso brothers. How about Enzo Amore and Big Cass? I think it would be fun if they, as long as they could kind of avoid John Cena getting too cute with the humor and kind of watering down their act, but He's been a lot better about that since he returned to television, and we haven't really heard any overly cutesy things out of John Cena's promos. But you know, I would say of the existing talent pool, those are guys who jump out as possibilities, especially given that you know their current feud with the Social Outcast, if you even want to call it that, doesn't strike me as one that's going to last long. I mean, that might have just been a setup for next week's television show. For all we know, Cena does like to help with the young talent, and so I could definitely see that as a possibility. But again, I don't even know if they're going to go the six-man direction. I thought it was a decent night for the women on Raw. You know, Becky Lynch continues to shine. She's not the spotlighted baby face of the division. She might be the only true baby face in the division, though. But she showed really good fire again while attacking Natalya at ringside prior to her match with Summer Rae. That didn't actually happen. Natalya didn't say much, but she also didn't say anything that made me want to turn the channel, which is always good with Natalya. I mean, it'd be great if she could find her voice as a heel. She never really did as a babyface, but if nothing else, she can say very little. Say, you know, I just don't want to see them force it with her on the mic, with mic skills that just haven't been there. But then on the other side, we had Sasha Banks being spotlighted in the tag match, where it was she teamed up with Paige and beat Charlotte and Dana Brooke. And I was kind of surprised that they didn't have Sasha beat Charlotte in this match, and instead they had her force Dana Brooke to submit. Now maybe they'll get to that. But beating Brooke doesn't really mean anything right now, and that's why I didn't even like list it as a hit in the hit list. It just was kind of there. I guess it would mean something for Becky Lynch, given that she's lost, I think Mauro Ranallo said, 3 straight TV matches to Dana Brooke. But when it comes to Sasha Banks, it doesn't, for most people, it doesn't mean much to beat Brooke in a tag match. It means something to beat Charlotte. Hey, join me tonight for live coverage of TNA Impact Wrestling as the show airs at 8 Central, 9 Eastern on Pop TV. A loaded main event, triple threat, 3 biggest guys in the company, I would say. Lashley defending the TNA title against Drew Galloway and EC3. I'm curious to see how they're going to book that. I know the spoilers are out there. I have not seen them. I try to avoid them unless they're sent to me. And so I will be finding out as the show airs, so you'll get my natural reaction to that. So again, join me at 8 Central, 9 Eastern as the show airs on Pop. And finally today, please remember to subscribe to this daily podcast. Take a moment, rate and review us on iTunes if you get a chance, because you are helping spread the word about the podcast and ProWrestling.net, and that is greatly appreciated. And a big thanks to everybody out there who has already done that or takes a moment just to hit retweet whenever I send out a link to the All Access Daily Show on Twitter, again, at ProWrestlingNet. But that is going to do it for now. I'm not sure if I'll be back tomorrow or if that is going to be Will and Jake. I haven't checked with Will. By the way, no Pruitt's pause this week. Will is just tied up with some things at work. But I'll find out about the podcast. So you may hear me tomorrow. Otherwise, you will hear the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, I would assume. One way or another, someone will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Take care.